We're checking in on Afghan resettlement in communities across the nation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Some of the nearly 13,000 Afghan evacuees at Fort McCoy in west central Wisconsin are starting to be resettled. Hwaga Ghani is a journalist whose family fled Kabul, and they ended up at Fort McCoy sharing barracks with other families. And those weeks, they tested her patience. She was vexed by a U.S. bureaucracy, and her natural journalistic questions couldn't get straight answers. What questions do you have for a refugee of the Afghanistan war? Are you a refugee who fled another country to come to the U.S.? What was your transition like? 800-642-1234. Hwaga Ghani is a journalist who reported on the Afghanistan conflict for NPR. She'll be starting a journalism and human rights fellowship at the University of California, Berkeley. Hwaga, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Where are we reaching you now?
I am in California right now, in Hayward.
Okay, so you finally got off Fort McCoy. So before we get to your life in Afghanistan, or life at Fort McCoy for that reason, when did you get to leave for California?
So actually, it was the 8th of October. Mm-hmm. That was because the isolation of 21 days after the vaccination was finishing on the 7th, and then I decided to come out on the 8th. I left on the 8th of October.
Yeah. Do you have any family members still at Fort McCoy?
No, not really. Yeah. I had some friends, and they came on the 9th. They came out too.
Yeah, yeah. How does it feel for you now to have left the base?
It feels like I am free now. Yeah. Because when I was at the base, I couldn't meet anyone. Nobody could come and visit me, or I couldn't get out from the base at all.
Yeah.
So it's kind of feeling okay now that, you know, I really am in the U.S. right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are so many stages to your story, going from Kabul to Qatar to 4 days and nights in Germany to D.C. and then to Fort McCoy. I don't know where you would like to begin this journey, but what has that move been like for you?
When we came out, the feeling I had, because I had my family with me, mm-hmm. and I had to take them along with me. I had to make sure that everyone is safe. We need to go somewhere that where we can be safe. It was something that I cannot explain how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause all I was thinking at that moment, how to get out from here, and how to get out from Qatar, and then how to get out from Germany until we got to Fort McCoy. And then when I got to Fort McCoy, that was the time that I had like a little bit of thinking to myself that, yeah, I went through a very hard journey. And just because I couldn't think through it at that time, the only thing I was thinking about was how to get out and how to take my family to a safe place. That's all I was thinking.
Were you mentally prepared to flee your country, to flee Afghanistan?
Not at all. Not at all. Everything happened so, so quick. Like, I did not expect that. I did not want to leave my country. I was not prepared for it at all.
You didn't want to leave Afghanistan, and yet it's become such a dangerous place. What keeps you from, you know, wanting to leave? What was keeping you there?
it's my homeland. Mm-hmm. I love my country. I always wanted to serve my country. I wanted to work there, report from there. tell people how, like, how we are, what our culture is. Tell everyone that, yeah, this is Afghanistan. This is the Afghan people. This is how we are, you know. I always wanted to stay there and tell my people's stories to the world.
Mm.
And when I had to leave, I don't know how to explain this. I never wanted to come out, but I had to, because what I was doing, it was pretty dangerous at that time. And as you probably have heard, that we lost a lot of our journalist colleagues, yeah, at that time. And after the Taliban took over, I was scared too.
We're talking with Hagwa Ghani, a journalist who reported on the Afghanistan conflict for NPR, became a refugee in America, now in California. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Hagwa, can you walk us through your days? What reporting were you doing in Afghanistan? What was your work like?
I was reporting all the good stories, and also I had like the breaking news as well. Mm-hmm. Whatever was happening day to day, every second, every hour, I was reporting about that. Whatever was going on, there were so many blasts going on at that time. There were a lot of demonstrations going on. Peace talks were going on, so this was like the breaking news that I was reporting. And also there were so many good stories from Afghanistan about, for example, the girls who were playing football. There was a Premier League. I did a story on that with Tia Hadid. We both did that story, and there were so many other good stories. And there was a story that at the end I was working on, which was a girl was missing, and her family was looking for her, and that happened when there was a blast in PD6. So many, like, six people died, and there was this happened in a blast where it happened in west of Kabul,
mm-hmm,
on a school,
mm,
girls' school, and one of those girls was missing, and that was the story that I was working on just before I come out, mm, and she was missing until it was 40 days after the blast, and she was still missing, and her parents were looking for her, and there were no clues where she was and what she was doing. So I did, like, I was doing that story at the end.
Yeah. How difficult was it for you and your family to get out? What was that like?
It was pretty difficult, Kate. I can't tell you how how I went through everything, because the day the Taliban took over, I was working, and I had to leave my work and start running towards home. When I got home, I started planning on leaving, and I got in contact with all of my friends, whomever were like NPR, whomever was trying to help me to evacuate. So I kept in contact with everyone, sent a lot of emails, sent a lot of letters to the places that I knew that they were doing evacuation.
Mm.
So that happened. And then finally, I got a call from one of my friends who told me to get out of the house and go to a safe place, which was Serena Hotel. At that time, it was a safe house for journalists to stay, mm, there. And most of my friends were there as well. And I went there with my family, stayed there for like 4 days. And after 4 days, another friend called who found like an escort to the airport. And then we left from Serena, got to the airport from the state 2 nights at the airport with nothing, no blankets, no nothing. We were just, everybody was just lying on the grounds.
The airport itself, Kabul Airport, was a very unsafe place. Also, I would assume very frantic.
Yes, yes. It was, when we were there, so everybody was in this fear that, yeah, something's going to happen now, and next hour, and next minute. There is going to be a blast here, you know, there is going to be an explosion here. Everybody was in this fear, and everybody tried to get out as soon as it's possible.
We have Hawka Ghani, NPR's producer, in Afghanistan before her family fled Kabul. She stayed at Fort McCoy when she first came to the U.S. Do you think our country should be doing more to help Afghanistan evacuees? What would you like to see happen? How is your family, your church, assisting at Fort McCoy? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Hawka Ghani here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing how tens of thousands of evacuees from Afghanistan are resettling in communities across Wisconsin. We're hearing one person's story of the Fort McCoy experience on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 13,000 Afghan refugees who escaped the Taliban forces in August found themselves at Fort McCoy awaiting resettlement. Journalist Hawka Ghani is sharing her story about leaving a life she loved in her homeland before Kabul fell to the Taliban forces. What do you want to ask her? 800-642-1234. And Hawka is with us for about 9 more minutes. I want to ask you, you know, you've described yourself as someone who works all the time, a workaholic. Then at Fort McCoy, you had to wait and wait and wait some more. What was that like for you mentally?
Pretty frustrating, Kate. I didn't. I was trying to find something for myself to keep myself busy. I joined communities. There was a professional women's community that they had. So all the professional women from Afghanistan, from the U.S., State Department, our soldiers who were working there, they all would come together. We had meetings every Monday. And also there was another community that they had for the media, whomever, like journalists who came from Kabul with the public affairs of State Department. We would all get together and talk about day-to-day stuff, what we need to do, like things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said you missed simple things at Fort McCoy: bread, tea, and freedom. Why? Are
yes.
The, yeah. What about those things?
Yeah, because life in Fort McCoy, like a day-to-day life, was different than what, you know, how I was living. those were the simple and the small things that I really missed, because there was no bread for us, and all we had was like just a piece of bread 2 times a day, not 3. And we are so used to bread. We have bread in every meal. So that was that, yeah. And tea, for example, because there was like a 24-hour a place where they used to give us like tea, coffee, and stuff. And whenever I would go there, I wouldn't find tea bags. I would only get the boiled water. That's it.
No tea, no tea in sight, even though tea has been something where you have it as you convene with others, as you have community with others. Tea is always a part of that.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, you can't like complain about that. You know, I'm out of there now, but they did all they could. There were so many people, like 13,000 people are a lot of people to take care of, but they did whatever they could, you know.
Waga, how can we be allies to you and the tens of thousands of Afghan evacuees who've been forced to flee and, you know, flee their home? How can we be allies?
We need just a little bit of help right here because we are not used to the environment here. We're not used to the work environment here. We are not, we don't know how things work in the US because we come from a different country where the culture is different, where the people are different, where the work environment is different. So what I want is as an evacuee, I would like to understand things better, and I would ask for assistance until I understand everything, and then that you can expect anything from me. That you know, I am a journalist, I can start working, I can start producing, you know, but to understand everything, just I would need the help of making me understand the things that I don't understand.
We're talking with Waga Ghani, who is a journalist, reported on the Afghanistan conflict for NPR and became an evacuee in August, was at Fort McCoy. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. I understand you have a journalism and human rights fellowship that is at UC Berkeley. What work will you be doing for this?
I just need my work permit. So it's, my work permit is already, it has been sent to DC. And right now I'm trying to connect with someone who can send me the work permit here in the address that I am here in California right now. So after that, I can join Berkeley, and Berkeley has kept a reception, a welcome reception for me soon in November. So yeah, so I'm just waiting for my work permit to get here so I can start.
It's a little bit more of waiting is what I'm hearing. Did you
yes.
Did you ever get your luggage? Did you ever get reunited with the things you brought from Afghanistan?
No, still not. I'm still waiting on that.
That must be really difficult. I wonder, what did you decide to bring with you on that journey?
You know, whatever you think is important when you know that you're going to get out and you won't be able to have those things with you ever, probably ever again. So those were my documents, like my, wherever I worked, I had all the recommendation letters and stuff, documents like that. And also I had my recorder, my camera,
your field equipment. Yeah.
Yes. All of my equipment was in my luggage. That's all I brought. Only two pairs of clothes. That's it.
When you look at the news coming out of Afghanistan, coming out of Kabul, what do you think?
It gets me really upset. I thought we were going forward, but now we're going backwards. Everything was different when I was there. And what I hear now is a total different environment. It's a different atmosphere there.
Hmm. Waga, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Waga Ghani was NPR's producer in Afghanistan, left Fort McCoy on October 8th. We'll be starting a journalism and human rights fellowship at UC Berkeley. Just ahead, we talk with the executive director of a Madison organization helping to resettle Afghan evacuees. Would you welcome Afghan refugees to your neighborhood? 800-642-1234 to join in. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're looking into Afghanistan resettlement efforts here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Fort McCoy is one of eight military installations serving as a temporary home for tens of thousands of Afghans who fled Taliban rule, escaping on U.S. military flights in August. According to recent reporting by military.com, more than 9,000 Afghan refugees who had been living in temporary housing on military bases in the U.S. have been resettled in communities. Should the U.S. be welcoming more evacuees to our country? What responsibility do we have to help refugees from Afghanistan? Join in 800-642-1234. Don Burney is executive director of Jewish Social Services of Madison. The organization has a 90-day intensive case management program that helps resettle refugees in the area. Don, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Well, explain, you know, how many Afghan refugees do you expect will ultimately be resettled here in Wisconsin? What are the reports out there?
The number that I've seen most recently, I believe, is 850, although the number keeps shifting around, so I may not be right on that. Here in Madison, we expect to be receiving 50 Afghan refugees.
How is it determined where a refugee will be settled?
The primary, what they try to do is if you have a U.S. tie, so if you have a family member or a friend who said, I will support you in some capacity, then you can go to that community.
I see.
So that's actually how most refugees that are coming to Madison are coming, because they have friends and family already here.
There's a connection already established here, and so they will go to where that connection is.
Correct.
Yeah.
So part of that means that the refugees that end up living in Wisconsin may not be coming from Fort McCoy, mm-hmm. because people came to the United States and they were placed all over the country, and nobody at that point was looking at where U.S. ties were.
So walk us through the process of resettling. What does Jewish Social Services provide a refugee from anywhere?
So we resettle people from all over the world, as you just said, and actually in 2022, we expect to be resettling anywhere from 125 to 150 people from all over the world. When we first are told that an individual or a family is coming, we find them a place to live. For us, it's very important that we find them a place, one, that is affordable, and then also that is on a bus line. We work with a volunteer organization called Open Doors for Refugees, and they help us to get the apartment fully furnished, including home goods and a fully stocked refrigerator and pantry. If they're coming into the airport, we will meet them at the airport and bring them to their new home and have a culturally appropriate meal ready for them. And then once they're here, we help them make sure they get to all of their appointments. So they have medical appointments and they have to go to the Social Security office. And then we help enroll kids in school, adults in ESL. We help people find jobs, and we help everyone apply for benefits that they're eligible for.
I would imagine each case is very different from the other ones, even though there are some reoccurring themes, I'd imagine. But is it really dependent on each case?
It definitely is. If you have, for example, large families are much more complicated in Madison because we have a housing shortage, particularly for large apartments. Mm. So it becomes more complicated in that sense, just to find housing. Whereas individuals, we need to help them find roommates because it's really hard to live by yourself. One of the things that JSS does that is a little bit different from other agencies is that we raise funds so that we can pay security deposit in the first 4 months' rent for all of our clients. And we also get them a cell phone with 6 months of data, because in this day and age, you have to have internet to apply for jobs, for example.
Yeah. Don Burney is with us, Executive Director of Jewish Social Services of Madison, walking through the resettlement program from JSS and taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Don, you know, your program, that 90 days of intensive case management, what is really important to establish in those first 90 days of resettlement?
It's really important to make sure that people are connected to services, that once, for example, children are enrolled in school, they understand how to get there, which days of the week we have school. I remember a number of years ago needing to pick up a client on a Saturday morning, and one of the kids was out waiting for the bus because she was so excited about going to school, but we had apparently not thought to tell them that we don't go to school on Saturdays.
Mm. Yeah. What are the biggest challenges, the biggest barriers for refugees and specifically Afghan refugees that you're seeing now?
Language is a really big issue. There are very, very few Dari and Pashto interpreters in the state, which means that we have to rely more often on language line, which just makes everything go much more slowly. And it's very frustrating for people who, you know, are used to being very independent, who didn't expect or plan to be moving to the United States, and it just happened all of a sudden. So I think that has been a huge issue. This was not, as your speaker said in the last interview, this is not what anyone wanted or expected. So helping people adjust to coming to the United States and just how different things are here. And some of the things that are difficult aren't things that we necessarily would have thought about. Clothing, for example. Our stores generally do not have appropriate clothing for many of the women who are coming, who tend to wear long tunics that cover their entire bodies. You can't buy that if you go to Target.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, I believe, what I think is a technology tool. What is Language Line?
Oh, I'm sorry. Language Line is a way to, you call a number and you say what language you are looking for, and they will connect you with an interpreter.
Hmm.
And one of the things that we have found is because there is such a shortage in interpreters in Pashto and Dari, that sometimes there is a long wait just to get an interpreter on the telephone.
Hmm. Wow. Let's take a call now. Nancy is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy. What is your question?
Well, my comment is, it would seem to me to be more prudent to keep these people at Fort McCoy until a job is found for the man of the family or the woman that is commensurate with their education level. To move them and then possibly have to unsettle them once more to be moved to a different location for a better job or a job that they're used to doing. It just seems to me to be silly to move them too quickly.
Don, what is your sense here?
We actually have no problem at all finding jobs for our clients. When the economy was different, right now there is a labor shortage. And so finding jobs for our clients is really not the hardest thing for us at all. Quite honestly, and we can find them jobs that aren't necessarily paying a living wage, because honestly, a living wage is $20 an hour or more, but we can find them jobs that are paying double minimum wage. And we are often able to find them jobs that include health benefits.
Hmm. What about learning English? Is English a barrier to getting access to jobs?
It is, although it isn't in Madison, at least. There are definitely places where we can find jobs for people where you do not need to know English. They aren't necessarily jobs that people want to stay in forever, but I mean, that's the case with it's the nature of the industry is that people rotate in, they stay for a while, they build up their skills, they build up their English, and then they're able to move to different, better jobs.
Don Burney with us leads Jewish Social Services, helping evacuees from Afghanistan settle around Madison. Is your community or your charity assisting in resettlement or relief efforts? What support services are in short supply? What do you need more of? What have you learned as you help in the resettlement process? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Don Burney here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. has started to move thousands of Afghan evacuees from military installations like Fort McCoy and place them in communities across the nation as part of the massive resettlement. The government is getting help in this effort from nonprofit aid groups, from charities, from churches that have all stepped up. Are you involved in this humanitarian relief? Are you helping a family from Afghanistan get settled here in Wisconsin? Share your story, 800-642-1234. Don Burney leads Jewish Social Services of Madison with us for about 10 more minutes. Don, give us some history. Why does JSS do this resettlement work?
Well, we originally did some resettlement work in the late 80s, 90s, and early 2000s with refugees from the former Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. So it is something that we have done in the past. And we actually started this again in, actually, we started the discussions in September 2015, which is when across the world, everyone saw the photo on Twitter of the little Syrian boy who had drowned on the beaches of Turkey. At that point, I started receiving phone calls from people in the community who said, what is JSS doing about the Syrian crisis? And at that point, my answer was, well, nothing, we're in Madison. But then I talked to my board and we decided that it was actually the right thing to do, that one of the values of our agency is welcoming the stranger. And so at that point, we applied to become a resettlement agency, and we actually resettled our first Syrian family in December of 2016. So we've been doing this work for just about 5 years now.
Do you keep in contact with these families, or do they ever reach out, you know, years, you know, months later?
Actually, we do. Not everyone. Some, mm-hmm. are very self-sufficient, very independent, and has just moved on. And but others will come back to us if they need help. We work with refugees for up to 5 years particularly in the area of employment and education. But JSS has a policy that if once you're a client, you can always come back. Mm-hmm. So occasionally we will have people come back who might need help with benefits or applications or figuring out resources.
What do you need more of right now? How can people help?
Right now, honestly, the best way to help us are donations, whether it's cash or gift cards for places like Woodman's Grocery Store or Burlington Coat Factory or Kohl's. And this is because it's important for people to have control in their lives. So rather than our buying clothes for people, it is really nice to be able to hand them a gift card and say, we know that you came here with nothing. Take your family and go shopping and buy all the clothes that you need. And grocery stores like Woodman's, which I believe is all over the state, is great because they have food from all over the world.
Mm. Don Burney is with us, Executive Director of Jewish Social Services, and you can join in. What questions do you have about how Americans can help Afghan refugees now being resettled in the country? Do you welcome refugees to your neighborhood? What has that been like? What have you learned? 800-642-1234. We heard from Daryl in Kenosha, called in, couldn't stay with us, Don. Daryl wanted to know why we are not giving as much attention to the Haitian refugees.
That's actually a really good question. And unfortunately, I don't have the answer to that. It is my belief that the reason that we are focusing so much on the Afghan refugees is because so many of them are in danger now because they spent the last 20 years helping us in the war in Afghanistan. So we do have a very specific moral obligation to help them now because they put their lives in danger for our military and our military contractors.
When large numbers of refugees come to the U.S., they sometimes end up concentrated in a few communities. For instance, we saw how many Hmong refugees ended up resettling in California and Minnesota and here in Wisconsin. Are there established Afghan communities in the U.S.?
There are. Northern Virginia has a very high concentration of Afghan refugees, and so does Central California.
Okay. So you would expect to see larger communities build up there in the resettlement of people from the military bases.
I do. I think it's what's going to happen is going to be interesting because at some point, the nonprofits in those areas are going to be at capacity. Mm. And so people without U.S. ties are likely to be moved to other parts of the country.
Would you say JSS is at capacity? What is your situation in terms of how many people you can help?
We've agreed to resettle 50 refugees from Afghanistan. Again, for us, it's all an issue about housing. But we do feel that we will be able to do a good job with 50 from Afghanistan and 75 from the rest of the world, 75 or 100, mm-hmm. depending. And we're not going to take more then we are sure we'll be able to succeed in our community.
You know, when housing is such a barrier, how can you overcome that? How could you make housing less of a barrier? What would be needed?
We need more, in terms of the Afghani refugees, we need more larger apartments that are affordable. In Madison, so many of the larger apartments are downtown in the campus area. And the apartments, when they cost $700-$900 per bedroom, that's just not feasible for somebody who's making $14 an hour to be able to pay for. And so finding places that were within a reasonable budget would be a huge help for us. Smaller apartments we can find, but the bigger apartments are the ones that we really struggle with.
Have you been in talks with like private landlords to see, you know, if there's an ability to designate some home, you know, some apartments for resettlement?
We've done some of that. Mm-hmm. It becomes tricky because landlords have policies about things. So, for example, if a lot of the large management companies have a requirement for showing rental and employment history. Mm. Our clients can't do that. So they are automatically not eligible for those apartments. And that's a huge number of apartments in Madison. And it's a complicated thing because they're not necessarily allowed to make exceptions because then that possibly goes against fair housing rules.
Mm. What have you learned? What have you learned by doing this work, Dawn?
We have learned so much about different cultures in the world and remembering that not everyone does things exactly like us. It's also amazing to see just how successful people can be with just a little bit of help. Mm. We have one client, actually, who did come from Afghanistan probably 4 years ago, who was a high school student at that point. And he graduated high school and he's now an assistant manager at a restaurant. And he's only been, I mean, he was a kid when he got here. He's only, I think, 19 years old. But it's just been amazing to see, you know, how he's achieved so much in such a little bit of time.
Yeah, if you just have some of those basic resources, it sounds like to get established, anything is possible.
Absolutely. And we're seeing that with our clients over and over again.
Well, Dawn, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dawn Burney is Executive Director of Jewish Social Services of Madison. And earlier, we talked with journalist Hwaga Ghani, who recently left Fort McCoy in Wisconsin and is now bound for a fellowship at UC Berkeley. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.